Okay, we're back for episode 86 of Powers and Principalities. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing just fine. I got some communication from people who were saying that our last show had been censored by YouTube. And the one we did on collective guilt, we were talking about this before the show. Can you give a... just a brief synopsis as to what happened and what people can do to kind of circumvent it? I think it might be of some use to the people who are listening.
Well, yeah, I posted it, I believe it was Sunday afternoon, and then within an hour, it had been, I'd gotten a notice that it had been restricted for containing content that some people might find offensive or upsetting. So... that's the standard. Yeah. And apparently it was also restricted in several European countries. Of course, the topic was collective guilt. And so this happens periodically. Sometimes the whole video gets pulled. A restriction doesn't count against your account on YouTube, whereas you get three strikes and they end your account and they wipe everything off. A restriction just means you can't post comments or link it, I believe. You can't, send the... It doesn't link anywhere. You can't tell someone to watch this video. If you come up and you know to look for it, it'll come up and it'll give you that warning, fair warning, that you might hear content that might blow your mind, and you can click on it and listen to the entire program, I suppose. Some topics, of course, we discussed during that talk probably triggered the algorithm or AI they have that the ADL has, set up at YouTube. In fact, the mere fact that I just used the word ADL might trigger this one. So, or if you say Holocaust or something, it picks it up. Something like that.
Start changing the vowel,
Call it Chalacost.
Holocaust
and ABL or something.
ADL, AD dot L or something. Well, if someone is outraged or feels that the discussion merits more distribution. Do you have any suggestions as to what an individual can do?
Well, what I did in this particular case, I just put up another page, another program with real short, like a minute and a half, with the show's music, and with a link to my podcast directly, so they can listen to the entire show. Directly,
and they can actually distribute that. They can distribute your.
They can link that. Yeah, just say, hey, okay. Watch, link here. YouTube is just convenient because people know YouTube. It's good for wide dispersal. It used to be very good because it used to be if the more popular video got, the higher it went up on the, on the ranking, and it disseminated just based on popularity. Now they almost, I think, depending on what your content is, they got the algorithm or program set where it actually lowers the count. You probably do get a lower count. You can't really trust that anymore. Or it suppresses it. Same thing with Google searches. It used to be, if you notice that there's been a qualitative decline in search engine searches, if you look up a topic, it's very hard to find alternative information out there now. Whereas 5 years ago, it would be at the top because that's what everyone was using the internet for. So, the commissars at Google who run YouTube are now working in league, with outfits like the ADL. To suppress free speech and suppress information because they simply cannot compete. Rinky-dink operations like ours are too much for the mainstream.
Yeah, that's right. I know. We're wiping out CNN and Fox News. I've really noticed that, how they've just completely changed the algorithms at YouTube. Mm-hmm. So if you Google, what used to pop up, all kinds of interesting independent ideas about conspiracy or relationships between powerful people. That's all gone now. It's like you're asking, you may as well ask like Wolf Blitzer.
Or your college professor.
Yeah, I mean it's like so controlled. I mean, we really, we're going to do a show on the Clintons, or should I call them the Clintones, to get around the censorship.
Yeah.
the thing is, we probably, we need to start in general, developing a strategy, don't you think?
And I invite anybody for our shows is they can download the audio and put up their own YouTube and copy it and marry it. I don't care. So people ask me, can I take your video and marry? I always say yes. I get a few of those requests. So if you hear a show, you like it, and you have a page, just anyone's listening, just download the audio. And if you have a YouTube account, make their own video and put it up. I have no problem.
Yeah, it would sure be great to get the show we did on collective guilt to countries where that might be an interesting topic. Like, for example, Germany, just off the top of my head, Tim, it'd be a fine show to have distributed widely in that country so people could have different perspective on it.
Yeah, the show was also restricted in various European countries and protectorates around the world. So if you're like in Papua New Guinea, you can't hear the show because, God forbid, someone in Papua New Guinea starts to question the Holocaust narrative.
I mean, YouTube, it's pathetic. But yeah. Of course, this is how the slave state is set up. They first addict you to the use of it, and then they get rid of competitors, and then the next thing you know, it's an element of control, like Amazon and iPhones and things like this. You've got to really watch this stuff. And anyway, so we need to be clever and develop alternative strategies. And I'm really happy, Tim, that you're able to, give one option for people both to get to the show and then also to disseminate it.
Yeah.
That's great. So, well, let's just keep it up. And we're just going to keep forcing you two to censor every single show we do, because I don't know. I just don't feel in the mood to be censored. I'm sorry.
Well, the warning should be that some of this content you might find interesting. So we're going to restrict it.
Censored for being
interesting. The funny thing is that what they also do now, I've noticed, is if you talk about a topic, I did a show a while back with a gentleman who researched the occult symbolism in the Kennedy assassination, some of the strange occurrences and so-called coincidences and occult symbolism in this Kennedy assassination. I posted it. It wasn't restricted, but YouTube felt they needed to post a disclaimer with the standard narrative of the Kennedy assassination. Lee Harvey Oswald, the lone nut assassin, right? But then, they put up this almost like Wikipedia type explanation of the Kennedy assassination. They're doing this apparently in some based on what you talk about. So if you talk about something like the Kennedy assassination or something, you'll get a disclaimer.
It's almost like history could be used for propaganda purpose if bad people were in control. So grateful we have Wikipedia and the censors of YouTube to help us think clearly. to have a good history and understand. But yeah, just gee, thanks, guys. You're really,
I worked the other day and people were talking about the internet and someone made a comment. Well, if it's on the internet, it's true. And you have to be questioned what type of information you find, of course, because there's all types of, there's good and bad out there and all that. And I said, that's true, because you do search on the internet and the Kennedy and JFK assassination, and it told me that JFK was assassinated by a lone nut. Now, who believes that?
Yeah, right.
So
does anyone even buy that? Yeah, so it's kind of amusing in one way, but it's also, the beginning of a really serious struggle.
Because really a lot of these platforms, whether it's Google and YouTube, I've made this point before, these aren't, businesses that started from the ground up and this is private property or this is a private corporation and these are contracts that, they have the right to refuse business and these things. These are really the equivalent of a government, sort of a government private company partnership, a utility, if you will, kind of, because their monopoly status was granted to them virtue of billions and billions in subsidies and these things. Google itself was a recipient of large contracts from the CIA. Facebook itself was funded by NQTEL, you know, which is the CIA capital fund, investment fund, and these things. These are all at least theoretically belong to the taxpayer, and their growth, even the entire Silicon Valley, was a outgrowth of the military industrial complex, the research in these things. So there is some public claim to these things. And I would say that also under the Communications Decency Act in 1996, that a lot of these platforms and companies were given sort of a waiver from any liability from the content, under the understanding that they were providing information and free expression. And this is why they don't suffer the same risk as a newspaper does when it publishes an article or a letter or something. But now they are acting like they're newspapers, and they can edit and they can decide to publish and not publish these things. And in that case, then that liability should be rescinded under the Communications Decency Act, and they shouldn't be having that liability. I mean, immunity from liability, because they're now reneging on their original understanding of the law passed, 23 years ago. And these aren't free market companies. Again, Google, Microsoft,
Amazon,
these things, huge. It's not. It's that's like saying Lockheed Martin is nominally it's a private company, but come on.
We're getting far away from the Clintons, but one thing I've always wanted to know is just how much money the CIA invested in Disney World. I've actually got pretty good citations that it did happen, that there was, it was kind of circumvent how they got the money there, but they definitely were involved in it.
Well, they facilitated its creation by creating fake towns under their, this was the tradecraft in other countries, and cutouts and fake towns. And they did that in Florida, I think it was Lakeland, Florida or something.
Yeah. Lakeland, Florida. Right. And there was actually quite a bit of money spent from the government side on the thing. And obviously it just couldn't be more, indicative of something really evil. I mean, the idea of, an intelligence agency developing a fantasy entertainment corporation. I mean, this goes back to Gregor Lukacs and the Hungarian Soviet, and this is really looking really sick. But that aside, I've always wanted to know, well, how much money was spent? Because if this is taxpayer money, I mean, maybe we can get like a free ticket ride or something, as like when we go into that.
It was, what's his name? Donovan and Paul Helliwell, who helped CIA, Disney World get established. It all goes to sort of this cultural programming. And if you're involved if you're an intelligence agency, you're more interested in sociology and ethnography and psychology and manipulation of the public, and also, basically magic. It's manipulating the public mind in these things. And of course, a media company would be huge for that. And that's what Disney is. And Disney's dominance now is largely created out of subsidy and with the help of the CIA, at least CIA figures and law firms and these things. But that's how these things go, because you may not be talking about CIA proper, but you're talking about people who work for the CIA or connected to the CIA, law firms, PR firms, and these things, publishing houses like Time Life, and they're going to coordinate, and they're the ones that created the CIA, So the CIA is largely just sort of the public face. But you've written a lot about Gregory Bateson. What is it's all about weaponized anthropology. So
organized and weaponized anthropology. Yeah. I was reading an article this week about it was actually kind of absurd, because the reporter was like treating it with a straight face. He was, I think it was in the New York Times, I forget. I was reading a print newspaper, the article was that Amazon is changing the face of publishing. The future of publishing is going to change because of Amazon. And it pointed out that Amazon is basically creating novels, right, for target audiences, and it has a whole army of writers. You see, so in other words, the distinction between the publishing and distribution end and the creation of the literature is now being blurred. And the reporter was just treating this with a straight face, like, well, this is a revolution,
It sounds like Scientology.
Oh yes, I mean, it does indeed. But But you can see there's a little like problem in terms of freedom of the press. You see what I mean? When the publishing company owns the army of authors and it basically is a financial relationship with all these people, it can then decide, well, who's going to be popular, right?
Well, it's not a violation of First Amendment because it's just terms. Yeah. It's just terms of service, Joe.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, so that's the
it's the company store. So
yeah, the company store. But I think that they will try and they will have their victories. But I do think that the alternative media and the understanding of the secret society and of the weaponization, you know, of media, man, I think it's going to be hard to put back in the bottle. I mean, I'm sure they've got algorithms and psychologists working around the clock trying to figure out how to keep us mentally enslaved, but I don't know. It's going to be tough because, you know, this specificity of information that shows like ours and hundreds of other ones are coming up with, it's going to be hard to overcome. You know, it's going to, because there's just like I'm getting like just incredible interest in the creation of the Nazi Party.
Mm-hmm.
We did a show on that, and I, you know, put out some analysis about how that was, it was created, but through, you know, through the connections into British Freemasonry. Man, oh man, I mean, that's just, it just lit up this whole section of people that are now doing research into it. And you can see that, you know, one little concept, if it resonates with the truth, right, you know, it looks like it's legitimate. You know, well, then it starts research, and it's hard to shut all research down. I mean, I don't know how they're going to try to control that, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough because if people start getting interested in this stuff, and, you know, it's like, and one thing you were, before we started the show, you were saying that that sometimes the YouTube, you know, presentations that are censored actually get more publicity because that creates people, you know, that actually sort of creates interest in them.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Naturally, it sparks your curiosity because what do they want me to listen? What don't they want me to hear?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I mean, if it's so ridiculous and outlandish, then you can just let people, you know, speak their minds. You know, it's when
nothing to worry about.
If they want to make it illegal for you to hear something. If they want to make it illegal for you to consider an alternative view, then the mainstream, the official view, is probably a lie. So
yeah, and it is, and it's one that can't bear any like scrutiny.
Yeah.
Because if they thought that their lie could hold up, you know, then they wouldn't risk trying to, you know, basically promote the alternative ideas with censorship. So
yeah, you know, it's like a spouse presents the other spouse with evidence of infidelity, specific evidence, and the one being accused will feign outrage and storm out of the room, right?
Yeah, sort of like Hillary Clinton did when Monica Lewinsky affair was,
yes,
was brought up. So we were going to talk about the Clintons. Who are these people, Tim? You want to segue back into this concept now?
Yeah, the Clintons. Okay.
Yeah. About these guys.
Well, the Clinton family, of course, is a prominent political family. It is Bill Clinton, who was the 42nd president of the United States from 1993 to 2001, and his wife Hillary Clinton, who also served as the 67th United States Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013. She was a senator from New York for 8 years, 2001 to 2009. Of course, first lady. Of course, she ran for the president of the United States in 2016 and lost to Donald Trump. Bill Clinton's father was William Jefferson Blythe Jr. He was a traveling heavy equipment salesman. That's kind of funny, traveling salesman for Bill. Well, nothing really wrong with being a traveling salesman. I'm sorry, but anyway. He was killed in a car accident 3 years before Bill was born. I'm sorry, 3 months.
Three months.
I know. Wait a second. 3 months. I'm sorry. I wouldn't be surprised to have that be the official story, though, because then you'd be called a conspiracy theorist.
We'll talk about that. Yeah, people can guess, you know, like who he was and things. Yeah.
You think it was Winthrop? No, anyway, we'll talk about that. Bill Clinton's mother, Virginia Dell Cassidy, later Virginia Dell Blythe Clinton Dwyer Kelly, was born in Bodcaw, Arkansas on June 6, 1923. She was the only child of James Eldridge Cassidy, a grocer, by his wife, Edith Grisham Cassidy, a nursing anesthetist. Bill Clinton's father, William J. Blythe, was her first husband. They married in September 1943. 1950, 4 years after Blythe's death, the younger widow married car salesman Roger Clinton Sr. This was the stepfather Bill Clinton took the name from. It became Bill Clinton. Of course, Bill Clinton's brother, Roger Clinton, was named after him. And then there's Hillary Clinton. Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton. She was born in October 26, 1947. Of course, according to Wikipedia, she is a diplomat, lawyer, writer, and public speaker. She was born in Chicago, Illinois, raised in the Chicago suburb of Park Ridge. Reportedly a supporter of... Goldwater in early 60s. I've read that somewhere. She graduated from Wesley College in 1969 and earned a Juris Doctorate from Yale Law School in 1973. I believe that's where she met Bill Clinton. She moved to Arkansas and married Bill Clinton in 1975. I think he became the Attorney General, then the Governor of that state. 1977, she co-founded the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. And she also was appointed the first female chair of the Legal Services Corporation. So she was earning her liberal bona fides at this point. She also became the first partner of Little Rock's Rose Law Firm. This became very controversial because her husband was governor. This became the source of many scandals later on. As First Lady, she led the task force on public education. So she was advocating education reform, whatever that means. Let's see here. Now, of course, that's kind of their background. We all know he became president in 1992, or he was elected in 1992, defeating George H.W. Bush. Became president in 1993, Bill Clinton. His presidency and also their careers have been tainted by one scandal after another. I always thought with the Clintons, there's almost scandal fatigue. It's like a fugue. You start to confuse one scandal with another because they all tend to blend together. So really, you could probably get a doctor just in, you could have a doctor program just in studying Clinton scandals because there are so many. And of course, there was the Whitewater scandal. There's a Travelgate scandal. There was, we can get into some of these things as they apply to our conversation. The billing records scandal. There was the pay-to-play junkets with the Commerce Department, which may have resulted in Ron Brown's suspicious death. The renting of the Lincoln bedroom of the White House. There's fundraising scandals with these Chinese guys, Charlie Tree and John Wong. Johnny Chung, that was the late 90s. Of course, the big one was the Monica Lewinsky scandal in the following impeachment trial, which he was impeached by the House and then was not convicted in the Senate. Of course, in the last days of his presidency, there was Pardongate, where Mark Rich, a convicted tax evader and felon, I think he fled to Israel. Mark Rich's wife had given a huge donation to the Clinton Presidential Library and also Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign, 2000 Senate campaign, and lo and behold, he was pardoned. Later, there was the Benghazi scandal, and of course, the email scandals most recently during the presidential campaign 2015-2016. So those are kind of a list of these scandals. Strange enough, of course, the Clintons, we think of the Clintons as sort of Democrats, and of course, Bill Clinton defeated George W. Bush, but I think we might get into this in our discussion tonight, that there's a strange alliance between the Bushes and the Clintons regarding some of these, the hidden grammar behind things like Iran-Contra in MENA, Arkansas, and the use of that airport to import cocaine from Central America, part of a CIA program to support the Contras in Central America, and also to... basically to bring a lot of money and also a lot of money laundering, which had, I think, a dramatic effect on U.S. society and also its economy. We can talk about that, but the truth behind Iran-Contra and these things. But I also like to say, maybe we should also, before I let you kick in, is the Clintons also were the recipient, the political beneficiaries of the Democratic Leadership Council. And what does the Democratic Leadership Council represent in terms of American politics, what was going on in America in the 1970s, 1980s, how sort of it represents the corruption of the, what I would call maybe what remained of the legitimate left, the sort of the left being utilized by the oligarchs to promote well, globalism, and at the same time promoting the ideology of sexual liberation to sort of weaken the left. At the same time, they're carrying out a similar program, different tactics though, with the right, with the political right, so they can bring about what we're seeing today with sort of this globalism, globalist agenda we're seeing with both parties supporting it. So that's, I think it's pretty much good for a summation. Joe, what do you have to say?
Well, the thing I think, you know, kind of like to like talk about Bill Clinton, I mean, I think, you know, that both Bill and Hillary are so manifestly corrupt and have been exposed so many times that that is almost not necessary. I think that actually the more important part about them is that they're lifetime actors. I think that's really the most important thing. And like, so, well, who is Clinton? You know, they, when you have lifetime actors, you know, there's different things that can identify them. One is, of course, like pseudo events that are exposed as being false, which are, you know, just for the purpose of, you know, creating a political, you know, kind of facade. And then you think about, you know, the Swift boat thing with Kerry, where he was just being, you know, artificially, you know, brought up, you know, into and having some heroism so that later on he could run. And with Clinton, the first thing, you know, is his Demolé background. And this is, you know, kind of odd. He joined the Demolé, which is an aspect of Freemasonry. He was 15 years old. And so one of the first things is that, you know, he talks about it. He actually writes about it in his autobiography, and he kind of just sort of, you know, just talks about it like it's not that big of a deal. He was just kind of interested in the fun aspects and making him a better citizen. But the fact is, he actually was awarded the title of basically running the organization as a young person. So he was given a title, a Grand Mason or something like that. And then he was made what's called a Chevalier or a Knight. And so this was, you know, it shows that he was marked by some organization early on, because, you know, these are very unusual events, and there's only, I think, 1 in 100 Demolé individuals are given this title. So think back to like Helen Blavatsky's Masonic Passport, you know, about how it, before the whole project gets going, there's some kind of stamp of, you know, Masonic a stature. And so Clinton gets this at a very early age, and he actually in his and he wrote a book called My Life, and he talked about his experience with in the Demolé, and he wrote that given my affinity for Catholics, it's ironic that besides music, my major extracurricular interest from ninth grade on was the Order of Demolés, a boys' organization sponsored by the Masons. I always thought the Masons and Demolés were anti-Catholic, though I didn't understand why. Demolé was, after all, a pre-Reformation martyr who died a believer at the hands of the Spanish Inquisition. That's what he wrote. Now, that's really bizarre and quite shocking, because I don't know if you've ever read the actual charges that were brought against Demolé. But, you know, they were very specific. And they basically, to my mind, indicated that someone had realized that the Templars were actually kind of a proto-Mason organization. They were anti-Christian. You know, the charges were that, you know, they didn't really celebrate the Mass. And interesting to me is that one of the charges against de Molay was that the Templars were basically had the form of a human head. If you think of the Masons with the skull and bones, you know, how the idea of the head being cut off of some earlier, you know, messianic individual is something that they celebrate. So I think that, okay, so that's kind of my take on the charges against the Templars. But anyway, Clinton writes about them, and it's clearly just a mind control operation where he's trying to move people away from, you know, the actual sort of understanding of like the de Molays that even the historians have. And then the other thing that I think people should be aware of is that, you know, his whole political life is artificial. It's sort of like, it reminds me when you go through it of like Martin Luther King. You know, like there's simply no way that there was a, you know, some kind of legitimate trajectory of this person. I mean, first of all, so if you look at it, he's a de Molay. He becomes a, you know, the kind of master de Molay Mason of his organization. He is given this extraordinary title of the Knight, the Chevalier, which they only give to one out of 100 individuals. And then he gets a scholarship to Georgetown, from which he gets a scholarship, a Rhodes Scholarship, which takes him to Oxford. Then he comes in, he gets back, gets into Yale. But this is where it really gets interesting, because I go, well, first of all, like I'll just mention that the Rhodes Scholarship is another red flag, right? Because that's a very corrupt organization. It's a, you know, it's a, you know, I mean, we can, we'll someday we'll talk about it, I'm sure. But it's, you know, there's no doubt that it is basically a secret society process thing, you know, that they take individuals and put them through this. And
they turn cowboys into gentlemen.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, but anyway, but what's very interesting, if you look at the timing, Bill Clinton runs Jimmy Carter's presidential Arkansas state campaign. And this is literally immediately after, I mean, within a year after, you know, he's out of Yale Law School and he doesn't have any particular background in political organization. He runs for the, like, I think he runs first for Congress, then he is elected as Attorney General, and then Governor, right? Now, he becomes Governor at 32. There's just, if you, you know, I'd have to, it would take some time, but you if you actually piece the timing of all this, he basically is going through the whole process of, you know, being part of Arkansas political life and becoming governor. And he's compressed that, which is normally like a 30 or 40 year span of activity, into like 5 years. And this to me is just an obvious red flag. I mean, he's obviously been selected, right? He is, you know, if you look at the Masonic training, if you look at the Rhodes Scholarship, if you look at the fact that Carter selected him of all people, even though he had no background, to run his presidential campaign. And I mean, Clinton had no background whatsoever. He's just being given, you know, a position of some stature inside Arkansas democratic process, political life, because they have this guy in mind, as you know, for what he eventually becomes. And so then you also have to remember that Arkansas is basically a slave state of the Rockefellers. I mean, they have so much political power. One of them was governor just a few terms before Clinton became governor. So, and there's always been these weird rumors about Clinton's background.
Yeah, that was Winthrop, right?
Yeah, Winthrop. I've never seen any good citation on this, but there is no question that he couldn't have progressed through Arkansas political life, let alone in this really compressed fashion, if there wasn't, some Rockefeller oligarch promotion of the individual. I mean, it just would have been impossible. So this background is, I think, just self-evidently artificial. I don't think that anyone can look at this, particularly in light of, what we've exposed in terms of like the Masonic influence and the secret society's influence in American political life, and look at this kid who at 15 supposedly just walks into a Masonic lodge just for self-improvement, ends up kind of running the little, kids organization, and then immediately gets these series of scholarships into prestigious universities, followed immediately by being given political offices in Arkansas, and then just accelerated to the whole process where he becomes governor at 32, and now he's set up as potential presidential candidate. So this is the first thing I would just point out about Clinton. Sorry to be long-winded. It's just that, like Martin Luther King, if you look into the background with the idea of a life of looking for a lifetime actor, right? Not just accepting the narrative, we've been talking about, just the droning propaganda effects of fake narratives, where people just accept things because they're written in the newspapers. But if you look at a little skepticism, you can see this is obviously a lifetime actor. He's obviously been set up for a particular purpose, to be a political leader, and he must have ties into deep ties into the secret society, which kind of to jump forward to the conclusion, you could really see it then during the WikiLeaks, event with his wife's presidential campaign, where suddenly, Aleister Crowley pops back up with the spirit cooking business, where Podesta is being invited to a spirit cooking dinner, which is a Crowleyan, ritual. And then you have the extraordinary WikiLeaks where a person is asking Podesta for a Thelema favor, again, actually referencing Crowley's religion. So, I mean, as a package, it just stinks. You just have what is given the public is kind of ludicrous. And then in back of it, you can just start to smell, through these different events. And then the other one I would mention is just the Monica Lewinsky thing, which, enabled oral sex to be on the front page of every newspaper and off of the lips of every single TV announcer for over a year. And this is the timing of it is exquisite because, you're going to have the onset of pornography in a few years, right? With when the internet really takes hold. And so this whole thing is just an act, in my opinion, by a lifetime actor.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Wag the Dog?
Yeah.
And of course, that movie was released before the Lewinsky scandal, although it
shocking.
But the whole story seems to, at least have a very close resemblance to what would unfold in the next couple of years.
It's almost like foreshadowing. It was so shocking.
Even the beret, right?
Well, that was the thing that showed me. It was like a 9-1-1 foreshadowing is the beret, because the beret was just it was just an obvious red flag. They knew what they were going to do with the Lewinsky thing. I mean, look, Lewinsky, this whole thing was just a way to get oral sex as a normalized topic for mainstream media.
Yeah.
Because this is working on the other side of the subconscious, right, which is going to be overtly assaulted with the temptation of pornography that's just around the corner, right? Just around the corner when Clinton is getting this stuff going. It's just starting to take hold. So there you have it,
Yeah, and you have the cable news covering it nonstop, with the full lipped news babes talking about oral sex.
Yeah, well, and also
it's like you're being constantly titillated.
Just incredibly happened to be saved. It was saved, Really? You saved the blue dress with the stain on it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I mean, if you just sit there, kind of accepting what the media gives you as actually having some relationship to reality, you're kind of at a disadvantage because you can't see how ludicrous the whole thing is, right? I mean, of course, in hindsight, you can see that was just a way to normalize pornography.
And also, just to make everyone, choose sides, of course, now you have this ridiculous position where feminists like Gloria Steinem are announcing what their one grope rule.
Yeah, right,
When just
yeah.
a few years before, they were going after Clarence Thomas, for some remarks. So just the hypocrisy is there for all to see, either laugh at or just, it's part of the double bind, I think, perhaps, that they're creating for people in these things. It just, there's no coherence to these things anymore. That's, of course, that was also one of the functions of the Clarence Thomas hearings too, I think. As of course as Ken Starr was appointed, he was first investigating Whitewater, then it kind of it was, I think, Janet Reno gave him the authorization to expand investigation into Lewinsky stuff because suspicions of suborning perjury and committing perjury, which was there. I mean, obviously there's obstruction of justice, that was clear. He was indeed guilty of that. But the fact that so much energy was spent on finding out what exactly Bill and Monica did, at the same time Ken Starr's investigation is avoiding the 800-pound gorilla hiding just beneath the surface, which is MENA, Arkansas, cocaine, the Bushes, Arkansas Development Corporation, all the money laundering and these things, because that's really where the story was. It's also the story, the hidden grammar behind the SNL crisis and these things, with these SNL's banks were being raided by organized crime and intelligence agencies to fund black operations. But these things aren't being investigated or even talked about in the mainstream media. We're talking about blue dresses, blowjobs, oral sex, what the president did, didn't do, and these things, and
And the blue dress. And so the thing is, Tim, you are just such a pleasure to talk to because you're so clear-minded. You're absolutely right. Ken Starr is just one of the filthiest creatures that has ever crawled out of the oligarchic Masonic swamp. Oh God, and he had this very clean, smiling face, where he's going to be defending conservatism and American values. Oh my God. I mean, the public is just another just absolutely miserable lifetime actor. And instead of going after these just obvious criminal acts that the president and all of the individuals around him, the military intelligence, all these things that they're being involved with, in terms of cocaine smuggling and illegal wars. No, we're not going to be investigating that. We've got to get to the bottom of this Lewinsky thing. We just have to, we just have to. I don't want to do it, but the public needs to know. And oh my God, there turns out to be physical evidence. Incredible.
Well, it's funny because at the same time that, of course, that Newsweek, Washington Post, New York Times, all the major newspapers are caught up on L'affaire Lewinsky, they're destroying the career of Gary Webb, who's in his Dark Alliance series and books, exposed the MENA connection in these things, Arkansas's as a conduit or at least an operating the airport there for. Drugs being flown in, arms being flown out. And of course, this th thing about this is it isn't just the Clintons, it also brings in the Bushes and the Bush, George Bush, when he was vice president, also president, and Oliver North and General Secord and these things, and the use of the Arkansas, I think the Arkansas militia or National Armory and these things. If you read books like Terry Reid Compromised or Daniel Hopsinger's book on Barry Seal, you'll understand, you'll get the grammar behind these stories, behind these stories, how this is why it was covered up, because it exposed the, sort of the lie of just sort of the right versus left, Republican versus Democrat, and shows that these scandals are bipartisan. They
Yeah,
transcend political
the
parties.
scandals are the ones that are given to us to have an alchemical effect to debase culture, like Monica Lewinsky, and that the thing that I wish, Starr was a real person, not just a lifetime actor, you know, the whole MENA cocaine thing is, you know, would be good for the public to know. They could understand just how corrupted the democratic process is. But the more important thing would be to expose the fact that the whole left-right dialectic is fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the Bush family and the Clintons are you know, they just pretend to be on different sides of political issues to give this puppet show, you know, some idea of a drama and reality. Clinton and H.W. Bush were like fishing buddies in Walker's Point in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't dislike each other having political issues because, for God's sake, they were drug pushers.
Well, there's someone say that Clinton's at least ascendancy to national politics was a reward for his efforts in helping the CIA and the Bushes in the 80s in MENA,
yes,
Arkansas.
That's interesting. You know, I think he was, you know, as I look at him, I see him just, you know, he probably comes from, you know, the lineage has to be looked at. And I think he's probably, you know, when you have this kind of unclear genealogy, that to me is a red flag for someone like Clinton. It means that there is something kind of profound about the genealogy. I'd love to get a DNA test on this guy to see who he's actually related to. And the rumors about him being like a, you know, an illegitimate Rockefeller, I mean, that's perfectly possible. You know, I have no proof of this, but the rumors are analytically logical because his actual background seems just like the rest of his, you know, this history is fake. And, you know, the fact that he, you know, has, you know, he's got this, you know, this background with, his illegitimate father. I wanted to read, if you don't mind, from Clinton's book again, because this is an example of kind of you know, mind control, and this is fascinating. This one paragraph, this Clinton wrote. He says he's explaining why he left DeMolay. He said he decided he was going to leave DeMolay. Even though I really liked the Prince Hall Masonic conventions, you know, what he'd gone to, and he talked about, you know, gee, all these distinguished Americans, you know, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin. But he says, I didn't really need to be in a secret fraternity to have secrets. I had real secrets of my own rooted in daddy's alcoholism and abuse. They got worse when I was 14 and in ninth grade. And my brother was only 4. One night, Daddy closed the door to his bedroom, started screaming at Mother, then began to hit her. Little Roger was scared, just as I had been 9 years earlier on the night of the gunshot. Finally, I couldn't bear the thought of Mother being hurt and Roger being frightened anymore. I grabbed a golf club out of my bag and threw open their door. Mother was on the floor and Daddy was standing over her, beating on her. I told him to stop and said that if he didn't, I was going to beat the hell out of him with the golf club. He just caved, sitting down in the chair next to the bed and hanging his head. It made me sick. In her book, Mother says she called the police and had Daddy taken to jail for the night. I don't remember that, but I do know we didn't have any more violence in our house. Isn't that something? I mean, what a little hero, you know? I mean, and so he doesn't need secret societies because he's, you know, at 14, he's standing up to his alcoholic father. But see, the thing is that like in a paragraph like this, I mean, I don't know about you, but I just look at this as preposterous. This is, you know, I mean, it's like politicians kiss babies. You can kind of like excuse this sort of stuff.
Yeah, embellishing and making things up.
Embellish his life. But you know, just you can see how, but I think this is like a little more finely crafted than just the embellishment, because you see here, he's a victim, right? He is a victim of violence and alcoholism. And of course that's setting himself up to, you know, be basically the defender of victims. Right.
Yeah.
But he's also heroic. You know, here he is a young man. This event happens when he's only 14. And you know, and then of course he gets to have the idea of the violent white male, right? Mother was on the floor and daddy was standing over her beating on her. This doesn't exactly promote the nuclear family concept, does it?
No, so, it's the bad. This is the authoritarian personality.
He's hitting all of the bases, you know. And so I just think when I look at a paragraph like this, particularly from someone who's with a completely fantasy, you know, background, I just go, God, this is very clever. You know, this is like mind control 101, where he really has, or whoever's writing it really does know exactly what they're doing, and they're just creating this episode. Now this is Clinton. Now, Tim, I think I've told this to you, but I actually have, and I think it's now come out in other sources. I don't know. I have to look at this, but I actually, my next door neighbor for some time was a former governor. I won't name him, but I mean, anyone who does like 30 seconds of research can figure it out. But anyway, so you talked about the Mark Rich pardon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my next door neighbor was pardoned on the same day as Mark Rich. He had been put in jail, or he'd been convicted, and he was standing, he appealed, and he was out on bail. But he was facing a pretty big prison sentence because of it, of his involvement as governor in the SNL crisis. And when Clinton pardoned Mark Rich, he also pardoned my next door neighbor the same day. And this got a huge amount of eyebrow raising, because people could understand why he pardoned Mark Rich. That was just a strict pay for play kind of thing. But they couldn't figure out what the hell was he doing pardoning this guy, because he was a conservative Republican and he'd been, you know, already convicted once for this whole business with the SNL crisis. Well, I said, so why, how did, what, whatever brought that about? And he told me, he goes, I knew Bill well at Yale, and he was a complete alcoholic. He was always drunk. And one day he passed out and fell in the lake. And I went in and got him, and I dragged his ass out of there, and I got him back on the land and got him breathing again, you know. And so I said, so this was like typical Clint. He goes, oh, he's a complete wastrel. He's just, you know, just absolute, you know. And now this is really important information, because this is a guy who actually knew him, and this was someone who had been pardoned by him. So I don't think you would get, you know, negative exaggeration 30 years after the event. So he was actually describing, I think, the real Bill Clinton as this, you know, kind of alcoholic wastrel character. And so he pardoned this guy and basically communicated to him, says, you know, we're even, because, you know, you pulled me out of the lake and I owe you, you know, my life for that. And now I've made it square. But you see, the important thing is, to me, is that this is a real description of Clinton. You know, you have the lifetime actor. You know, he's at Yale. He's there. He's on the Review. He's on scholarship. He's just got the Rhodes Scholarship. He's going to be running Jimmy Carter's campaign. He'll be the district attorney of Arkansas in like 3 or 4 years, right? Well, that's all the facade. The reality is he's like Martin Luther King's doctoral dissertation. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And the reality is this guy's giving you the real time, you know, this is what Clinton is. He's a drunk. He's not going to school or like, you know, that's all that stuff is not important. He's just biding his time there. He's already, you know, he's already starting the process for the greater avenue that's been established for him. And so the fact that, you know, you talk about him, you know, basically being involved with the, you know, the MENA deal before, you know, he was then touted and brought into, you know, higher level politics, that just makes perfect sense. You know what I mean? It seems much more logical than, you know, the story that, you know, we've been given as the narrative.
And of course, his better half, Hillary, the reportedly rock, Goldwater supporter in '64, she steps into the scene in the '70s after the to Yale Law School, and she's a child's rights advocate, so perhaps a feminist in these things. So she's kind of filling all these roles. To stereotypical, ambitious woman, career woman of the 1970s. She goes to Roy's law firm, peddles influence because she's the governor's wife, so she's the rainmaker for Roy's law firm. And of course, she's able to kind of ride Bill's coattails. Bill being that he's good at shaking hands, working the crowd. So he becomes the politician. With Mena, Arkansas, there's a this is how important that was, because it wasn't just drugs and money for Contras. Rodney Stitch wrote a book called Drugging America, and he writes about Mena and its importance. He writes, Mena became famous in the 1980s for the arms and drugs shipping through this Western Arkansas airport by the CIA and other government agencies. It involved Oliver North, Vice President, and then President George Bush, Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton, others who became involved in covert activities. My CIA sources indicate that the profits from drug sales far exceeded what was needed for these black operations. They report that most of the profits are hidden in offshore financial institutions, and much of these funds come back in well-disguised forms and corporations, acquiring properties and businesses of all types. My CIA contacts described Bush's heavy involvement in Central American operations, in which drug trafficking constituted a major role. So Mid-Arkansas was sort of this key transit point for cocaine coming into the United States, and weapons going the other way. The Rose Law Firm, for which Hillary Clinton and Webster Hubbell, the assistant attorney general who eventually went to jail, were senior partners, were involved in negotiating contracts with the CIA in Mena, and helped set up numerous fraudulent CIA fronts for money laundering, for the cocaine and the weapons transport. The whole Arkansas government was changed to accommodate this so-called enterprise. And so the Clinton created, was one example was this Arkansas Development Finance Authority, which the bonds of which were financed by cocaine proceeds. And a lot of this money went into, this money found its way into like Tyson's Food, Walmart, and helped fund, according to Barry Seal, fried chicken fast food place was the beneficiary of this. It became a national chain, and this gives us a look in how this illegal operation just below the surface is going on, and it's fundamentally changing not just the culture and the society, but also the economy of the United States, because it's leading to sort of this corporate cartelization of the United States, this concentration of wealth. Catherine Austin Fitz writes about this, about the importance of drug trafficking and money in these things in warping the U.S. economy, how it's invested in the stock market. There's her book, Narco Dollars for Beginners, is a good primer on this, about just how influential that the proceeds from the illegal narcotics trafficking is in floating banks, keeping banks liquid, fueling stock market booms and these things, capitalizing certain companies at the expense of their competitors. So the winners are involved in drug trafficking and the losers are not. She also writes about how the Clintons, during the era of reinventing government, under the pretext of reinventing government, and what one aspect of that was the privatization of prisons, and how these corporations were formed, like the, I think, Correction Corporation of America is one of them. How this also coincided with a crackdown on drugs, the drug war, and how this crackdown would be utilized, target certain communities, not only to eventually, use the communities that the CIA is flooding with drugs to drive down property values with the idea of gentrifying them a few decades later. We're seeing that happen now, by the way, in many of these communities. At the same time, the crackdown on drugs would supply warm bodies for the ballooning prison industrial complex. Many of these people perhaps are guilty of something, but many were not, perhaps. But nevertheless, it was designed because the warm bodies would fulfill the contracts that are worth billions to these corporations. At the same time, you have a budding, it's almost like they use the labor of these inmates to build things like Kevlar, you know, to manufacture certain materials for the computer industry, and also Kevlar for the military and these things. So it was an entire sort of business plan that was being developed here under the liberal Clinton administration. And why I mention this is because I mentioned going into this, of course, the Clintons were the beneficiary of the Democratic Leadership Council, sort of moderate Democrats, you know, sort of the sober ones. They weren't the McGovernites, the wackos. And this, many people credit Bill Clinton's victory in 1992 by appealing to moderates, people who had voted for Reagan in 80, 84, and Bush in 88. Many of them decided to vote for Clinton because, despite his, remember, all that stuff of him being a hippie, avoiding Vietnam and these things, a lot of that's, you know, part of that, you know, part of that, that's just part of that role he was playing at the time, perhaps. But nevertheless, he came across as sort of a, you know, business-friendly Democrat. And this sort of is an illustration of what happened to the left and the right in the 1980s, how they were sort of utilized by the oligarchs to stake out certain positions to facilitate this drive towards globalism and this wealth concentration in this country and throughout the world. Because what you had in the 1960s and 70s, sort of the left abandoned traditional Democratic or leftist concerns like workers' rights, higher wages, and these things for sexual liberation, gay rights, feminism, and these things. Of course, the reaction on the right would, many people would go to the Republican Party, like many Catholics would flee to the Republican Party because of the social issues. But at the same time, the Republican Party is being guided by so-called free market, you know, ideology and these things, low taxes, small government, and these things. And so, but at the same time, the left is completely defanged, finding meaningful reform or programs that maybe defend, you know, the middle class or the little guy. At the same time, they're promoting the degeneracy, which the oligarch wants to promote. And we see this with the authoritarian personality. You see it with the support of Planned Parenthood. We see it with Herbert Marcuse. We see it in the memorandum in 1969, and how Planned Parenthood was working with the federal government to promote things like homosexuality, abortion, and divorce. This a program of promoting sexual degeneracy, so you can atomize society and pretty much facilitate this process of globalization we're seeing today, with corporate concentration fueled by drug money. At the same time, you also have in the 1970s and 80s the policies that would lead to the deindustrialization of the United States. So we see a lot going into these things. Now, what does that have to do with the Clintons? Is the Clintons, as you said, they're lifetime actors. They're part of the political class who are hired to facilitate this, to put the Democratic facade on this oligarchic agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. I just wanted to, before I commented on that, I wanted to just kind of follow up on a thought you would start. Like Hillary was, I think, you know, the marriage looks arranged to me, because you have, well, clearly, I mean, you have Bill as having all of the foibles that the feminists claim about the white male, right? I mean, particularly is like sexual problems, you know, with just constantly philandering, you know, and yeah, he just can't control himself. And in back, you have Hillary, who is, you know, the stable one, much smarter than Bill. You know, Bill has this cornpone accent that he doesn't actually talk that way, but he does when he's in front of the camera or the right crowd. He kind of like George Bush Jr. get his tax Texas accent going, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though if you see video of him when he's younger, he doesn't have it at all. But he developed it as president, and Clinton gets this cornpone thing going, and so it's part of what you know, it's part of the destruction of the family, because Hillary is her role is alchemical. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Her she is an abused woman who would be better off without Bill. It's just clear. And so this, you know, when the Lewinsky thing occurs, you know, it's just, it enables pornography to become public domain, but it also promotes feminism too, right? At the same time. So the family's getting hit in two directions. And then the other thought I was going to have is that, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz is a very clever person, and she was looking at the world debt structure, and she said, made the comment that, you know, there's so much debt. The question comes to mind as to who's collecting the debt, the payment. And she said that it appears there is some extraterrestrial being, or that must exist, because all of the entities in the world aren't really, you can't really understand as to who actually is. There's so much debt being paid for. Who's actually collecting all this debt? And my point is that, well, she's right. It is extraterrestrial, in the sense that it's kind of a UFO. It's non-existent. I hope I can make this point clear. I think that when you look at like the MENA, Arkansas, business, and they're bringing the cocaine in, and the idea is that they're making all of this money, and even like the Clinton Foundation, stealing all of this money. This is alchemical. They're trying to create. They're actually supporting the dollar with this claim. Because remember, they own the Federal Reserve. They don't need to steal money. They can just print it. And remember, the Federal Reserve is not audited. It's not audited. No one knows what the hell's going on in there. I mean, if they want to give Clinton billions of dollars, they just give him billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. The idea that they make these people appear to steal it is just a way of like supporting the dollar.
Yeah.
Because part of the psychological idea that the dollars really are real and hard to get, hard to acquire. You have to steal them, but the fact is, it's just part of the mind control. Mm-hmm. They need to sell cocaine to come up with trillions of dollars. They just can put that much credit into their checking accounts anytime they want. So this is just part of how we're manipulated and controlled. And so that's that's my take on those two points, is that Hillary was a very sophisticated lifetime actor. It's sort of like the paragraph that I was reading about, where Clinton talks about mother and daddy and how he breaks in. This is all just mind control. This is just, they're always trying to manipulate us in a certain way. And I think they definitely were running the drug deal. But I think that was, that was because they want drugs to come into the country and be disseminated, particularly into the inner city, where they can, create the integrated debased culture to shove the middle class when they finally, get deracinated enough. So, the Clintons are, they're an ugly couple. The idea that
they truly are an American political family, though, right? They pretty much.
One thing about like I would point out is like when we had Trump versus Hillary, it was interesting. The thing I thought was most interesting is that both of these guys had brown hair when they were in their 20s, and now running for president, 40 years later, they're blondes. I think I often thought if they had more. Easy access to good working hair dyes, every one of the Third Reich's administrative cohort would have been blonde. He would have him.
Well, if you didn't mention what came out about the Clinton Foundation and the latter half of the
I was going to get into that. Yeah,
yeah, because there you get the raping of Haiti. The pillaging of Haiti. I mean, of all places to pillage Haiti, then you realize, well, there's not much wealth in Haiti right now, at least not real wealth. It's all latent, I guess. You have human capital that could be developed, I suppose, if properly managed or cared for or just not exploited. But the disaster in Haiti, the exploitation, Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Foundation, how billions went into Haiti, none of it went in to help Haitians. And not to mention the fact that
it just went into to like set up the Clintons owning and running the place. They ended up with
her brother got the mining concession
permits. Yeah. I mean, they run the telecoms now. They've got the only gold mining permit in the island. All of the hotels now are part of the Clinton Foundation group. I mean, they just raped it. And so this should have been a clue that, well, wait a second, maybe they aren't really driven by altruistic forces like they claim. I mean, is it possible that that when Bill talks about like I was just going to
there's also human trafficking involved too, apparently, with Lawrence Silsby, right?
Yeah, well, the memory, but yeah. Clinton, Bill was at like little St. James Island.
Yep.
For like four times or something,
Lolita Express with Epstein, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean this is
and Epstein is another one who has no one knows where he got his money. Right?
Yeah.
He was like, given a mansion in New York by that guy who owns the clothier or something, and no one really knows where he got his money. He just became a billionaire.
Right. I mean, who knows? I have another, like Mary Clinton quote from the from his biography, autobiography. He talks about Martin Luther King, and he goes, he's talking about Kennedy, but he goes, I badly wanted him to win, especially after he called Coretta King to express his concern when her husband was jailed. And after he spoke to the Southern Baptists in Houston, defending his faith and the right of Catholic Americans to run for president. And I mean, I just broke up laughing.
That's right. There's that photo op with Clinton and JFK, right?
But I mean, oh yeah. Yeah. You're really like, it's like reading about like the Schiff family's creed, backing up the NAACP, supporting the NAACP after like using slaves as collateral and financial, maneuvering for decades, they're really out there trying to help the black people. But this just cracked me up because I had just been reading about the Clinton Foundation in Haiti. And they were just raping it just right and left. And then I came across this again. I badly wanted Kennedy, especially after he called Coretta King to express his concern when her husband was jailed. Oh, it's crying. I'm crying. Just horrible. I mean, it's just, you wonder, I don't think he writes this stuff. I'm sure there's,
a ghostwriter.
Propagandist. Yeah. But even the guy who writes it, the propagandist, do you think he has a straight face or is he just laughing his head off when he's coming up with this stuff? Because surely they know that Clinton, if you give him half a chance, would just, you get into the whole like Pizzagate thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, how realistic is this? If you look at Haiti, right, man. And you think of, well, and in fact, there was very, very, I thought, well vetted child, endangerment situation that the Clinton Foundation was involved with. That one woman was caught, trying to get 40 kids out.
Lauren Silsby, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Clinton Foundation was kept apprised of it and evidently gave some political, support for her. Mm-hmm. Really, kind of sick stuff.
And I think to this day she runs some sort of refugee outfit, doesn't she?
Yeah.
That's what these countries are for. I mean, you talk about destabilization, and most people can comprehend that. Some corporations or financial interests might target a country for destabilization so they can exploit the resources. Numerous examples in Latin America and Africa and Asia throughout the years, and that's true. But they don't also, what follows from that is also they don't look at the people there as a resource, whether it's for child trafficking or sexual exploitation, but even for organ trafficking, illegal organ trafficking.
I know. Well, here's this is like another, like, just shows you just how much caring Bill has. He goes, I had been for LBJ in the primaries because of his Senate leadership, especially in passing a civil rights bill in 1957, and his poor Southern roots. And I also like Hubert Humphrey because he was the most passionate advocate for civil rights. Yeah. You can really see these just deep concern, these fundamental structures in Clinton's, personality of trying to support black people when they got a chance to get at Haiti. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wonder if the public takes the propaganda even seriously at this point, because it's It's absurd. I guess that they do. I mean, they keep turning, some people at least keep turning on CNN and Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, tens of millions.
Yeah, so yeah, there it is. There has to be some people buying it, but man, it just is getting harder and harder to put up with normies, you know. I mean, there's just so much evidence to the contrary that.
Well, the thing is, when you point these out with the Clintons and the scandals and the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Foundation is a great example because you have an example of an institution which didn't even file the proper paperwork.
Yeah, that's
where it
right.
operates, which means usually yeah. that's usually grounds for a criminal investigation because obviously when you're running a foundation for charity, the opportunity for corruption and embezzlement is immense. So. You know, there's supposed to be some sort of scrutiny to these things, accountability. They didn't follow the paperwork, so you think the IRS would be on all over this, but nothing's really been. It's talked about, but there's never any real criminal investigation. Same thing, you know, with the emails, you know, with Hillary Clinton. There's never really an investigation. It's an indication, you know, at least an indication that the system is rigged. And basically, yeah. what we saw with Hillary, and this is similar to the Clinton Foundation, Hillary at the State Department, is she was using these positions more or less to influence peddle or to shake down or to get bribes. And that's why it was on, most likely why it was on a personal server. You know, she was using her offices for those reasons again, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, you've got the Thelema favor, right? And you've got Podesta being invited to a spirit cooking, you know, which is a Aleister Crowley ritual mm-hmm. thing, right? Where has there been an investigation by mainstream media into that? Isn't that something that, like, when you actually have, like, you know, invitations to the you know, campaign manager of a presidential race to, you know, be part of a satanic ritual and evidently is a member of, like, an Aleister Crowley religion. Isn't this grounds for someone to, like, you know, say, well, let's do a little bit of a, you know, some investigation?
Well, if you're a judge, you're a Catholic, we'll question about your dogma.
Yeah, you know, how about that?
But they won't. The White House chief of staff or campaign chairman for major, you know, from a major political party for campaign for president apparently is telegraphing Aleister Crowley.
Yeah,
at least it's grounds for, like, a story on, you know, at least front page of the New York Times. It's a little strange.
Well, it just, you know, it won't come out because the media, you know, as we saw with 9/11, the media is 100% control. I mean, the mainstream media is control. So they can't even take one step in this direction because what this is actually bringing, you know, to people's mind is the idea of lifetime actor.
Yeah.
The lifetime actor concept is one that, man, that the mainstream media just has to crush.
Well, you're not going to hear about the mainstream media because the editors and the hotshot reporters, they're the ones that are invited to Bilderberg. They're the ones that go up to Bohemian Grove and they probably attend the various Eyes Wide Shut parties around. You know, so they're compromised or they're part of the cult, so to speak. So they're not going to say anything.
Yeah, and they know that if they do, that they're probably be killed because this would really break the fantasy. You know, it's when you look at Clinton, you know, and even like when we were talking with the collective guilt discussion we had last week, there is this kind of psychic bubble, you know, that people, the normies, walk around inside, and the Clintons are just part of the bubble, you know, the story that you get about them. You know, it's like Monica Lewinsky, Hillary's smart, Bill cares about civil rights.
Yeah, I used to wonder. I wonder about that, and this is maybe, you know, I don't so much wonder about someone who supports Trump because I can see many reasons why someone might have supported Trump. But when I would run into people who, by any other observation, I'd say are kind of smart, sophisticated, and they have a "I'm with her" sticker on her car, and they support Hillary Clinton. Is it because they're cynical and their interests lie in her becoming president? And they don't care, or are they just that fooled or stupid or ignorant? I don't think stupid because they're not stupid people, you know. But again, I run into the same thing. It's still people who still don't understand the true nature of the Bush family and the Republicans. You know, they don't. Simply can't. They don't want to face up to the ugly truth at just the level of corruption, so they just crowd it out. So it's probably the same effect. It's, you know, their party, so they're not going to really worry about it. they'll focus on the Bush scandals if you're like for the Clintons or the Democrats, and the Republicans will focus on the Clinton and the Democratic scandals, Anthony Weiner, Bill Clinton, these things. They won't worry about the degenerates in their party. And even though, you know, Denny Hastert and these things.
And that's what I tell, look, if you hate Trump and love Hillary or love Trump, and you are lost as far as clarity of this reality, because this is a puppet show. The whole purpose of the puppet show is to keep you distracted. And what you really need to do is not care what the puppets are doing, but try to follow the strings from the puppet up to whoever is manipulating them. Mm-hmm. This is what you really need to do. And so, you know, with the Clintons, you look at the background of Bill, you know, he's got the Jacobs family. This guy, Jeremy Jacobs, you know, is supporting him in a very, you know, like in his first campaigns. And it just, you know, you just have to wonder, well, why would Clinton be supported while he's basically just out of law school, by powerful people? You know, it's so he's artificial. You
think he'd be bucking just for partnership in some
trying to get a job.
Law firm somewhere. A job somewhere. Yeah.
But he's already this powerful person in a state, which of course is 100%, you know, Rockefeller and oligarch. It's just a swamp that they own, you know. And so, you know, it's just I would try to have people have less emotion about like the Clintons. People who hate the Clintons, I always think that this is, you know, they're certainly loathsome. And they're certainly worthy of hate, but it's the wrong emotion.
I mean, that's the thing that I remember when Clinton was running for president, became president. And I think I've mentioned this to you before, is back in the 90s, I had my friend's father, a World War II vet, hated Bill Clinton because of the draft issue, his draft, so-called draft dodging, when he said he loathed the military, he didn't want to go to Vietnam and these things. And this, in his mind, was the worst thing he could do. Then, of course, the other things like the sexual peccadilloes and infractions and crimes he was accused didn't help either. But literally, it was that draft issue, because here was a guy from a World War II generation. You know, that memory, he volunteered to fight for his country, and it was seared into his memory, into his consciousness. So that was such a huge part of his life. It shaped his life, his youth. Yeah. His youth was touched by fire, as you know, as Oliver Wendell Holmes said about the generation of the Civil War.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing to recover from, right?
Yeah, you really can't recover. But the worst thing Bill Clinton did, in his estimation, was avoiding the Vietnam War. And I remember, you know, thinking a little differently, saying, you know, I'm not a fan of Bill Clinton either, but I think the least offensive thing Bill Clinton ever did was not serve in Vietnam. But for him, that was it. And that was it. And goes back to the whole 60s generation thing that you've written and talked about, the sort of manufactured, you know, counterculture. And his generation, World War II generation in the 60s, and they're in their 40s, was designed to be revolted by that, to create this cultural, this sort of generational divide that was manufactured, you know, by the secret society, by the, you know, the foundations and the media.
That whole thing, right. They were splitting everything apart. They were trying to fracture European culture in every direction that they could. So the generations were fractured, the husband and wives were fractured, and then the children were fractured away from the parents.
Yeah. And you have a generation like the World War II generation. I mean, as much as the 60s, your generation was subject to psychological warfare, well, so was the World War II generation. That's what, I mean, there's no better example of social engineering and psychological warfare than mass conscription and a world war. Marching in line, going off the battle. They just didn't recognize it was because America had won the war. The triumphalism of the Second World War kind of obscured this and the post-war prosperity. But these are the guys that, you know, they left their ethnic neighborhoods to go fight, and they came back, took jobs, and a few years later they were forced out into suburbia, either by manufacturing economics or integration. And they're being forced into suburbia where they became white Americans, you know,
Their children then were
deracinated,
by the counterculture. Yeah, so it's this is what happens when you don't pay attention.
Yeah,
I'm sad to say, you know, they no one at that point was really questioning if there was a hidden malevolence in the political class.
Yeah, right? no consciousness of that, really. Right? Yeah,
no consciousness of it. Even though, you know, when you look at, you know, like the Masonic control pushing Europeans into one another during World War One, you know, when you think about like 60,000 people in an afternoon, machine gunned down, just forced to walk, you know, you'd think that the thought would occur, right, that, well, maybe this is all just a setup of some kind, and maybe there's some hidden agenda here that we're not being told about. Because there sure are a lot of bodies piling up out in the old battlefield.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, let's say you're a member of the Royal Air Force or the Army Air Corps, and it's February 1945, and someone's talking to you. Your target is Dresden, and you have some familiarity with what Dresden is. You think one pilot would go, "You want us to do what?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
No.
Firebomb. They knew these were incendiary devices. They're just there to start these Holocaust fires, you know, and burn people, you know. And so, yeah. So it's you know, it that thought didn't occur. The most critical thought that Europeans can have, just the most critical thought, is that, you know, the political class not really doing a great job for us. Our ethnicity is being genocided. Seems they claim it's accidental, you know, but it sure is systematic. Every single thing, all the way along, you know, the line going back and since Palmerston, basically, has been wiping us out. Maybe we should have this thought, you know, that perhaps there is organized malevolence and the political class is a secret society. You know, maybe we should have that thought. And then stare at old Bill Clinton and his bubble or bottle blonde wife Hillary in the same way, you know. And then when we read the WikiLeaks about the spirit cooking and the Thelema religion that these people are involved with, it'll make – then suddenly reality will be a little clearer, won't it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And if you, and it's been said that if you want to really know what's really behind politics just check, examining the books and the checking accounts and the assets of the political class will tell you more about real political science than all the textbooks in the world, because it's all about them being paid off. And if the career of the best example of that is Bill and Hillary Clinton, they become fabulously wealthy without ever running a legitimate business. After years of public service, they become multimillionaires.
Like Jeff Bezos. He's a trillionaire.
Yeah, trillionaire.
He's never made a buck, though. But now he has a whole army of authors and he controls all sides of publication. So you better believe that Amazon, the stable of Amazon authors, their novelists and their, you know, nonfiction writers, they're going to be very popular in the years to come, Tim.
Well, that's how we should look at these corporations. Is maybe be a talk for sometime later about, you know, why are corporations promoting global degeneracy? They call it global homo or some of these things.
Yeah.
Why is it being pushed so much? And well, a good example of that was recently, did you see that Gillette ad for about toxic masculinity?
Yeah, I did see it. Yeah.
There's a guy, Ramsey Paul, who has a show on YouTube. It's pretty, he's like an alt-right guy, a white guy. He talks about, but he's talking about these corporations. He says, he used to think that in the day, he says, why would a corporation insult their customers? It doesn't make any sense. It's going to hurt their business and all this. And he says, well, they don't care about profit. These corporations don't care about profits. Like, there's like a company store now, so they can go out, they can pursue this sort of this social engineering cultural program without any concern, because it's one big global store. And I agree with them. It's like these corporations, people say, well, they're really going to hurt their market share. They don't care about that. Amazon doesn't care about that.
Right, exactly. You have to look at them as part of secret society control. The corporation part side of them, that's just the narrative. That's like Bill Clinton, you know, wanting to be president so we could help black folk.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what the sheep are told. And so, you know, they think that there's something going forward that's like, you know, real history. It's nonsense. That's just, you know, they're just setting up social control.
Well, why would like IKEA, you know, run ads of gay couples buying furniture? That's not going to increase. There's no market for that. It's not going to increase sales. It's a cultural thing. It's same, you know, anything else. It's like, you know, it's.
Well, it's just weaponized. You know, just, these are just weaponized. Everywhere you go, the media is a weapon. now against us. We have to be aware of it. So, Tim, I got to go, but
okay, enjoy.
Thank you so much. This is, I mean, I hope that we can be censored this week, but if we aren't, I guarantee next week we will. We'll come up with better stuff to force them to censor us. But hopefully we'll also have some ideas and we'll keep, you know, expressing your thoughts about how to circumvent it.
Okay, great. Enjoy your weekend then.
All right, buddy. And it's like good luck with the new baby.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.